Good morning, and welcome to the Wednesday, January 14th, 2026 edition of Southern Champaign County Today. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and today's date is actually Thursday, January 15th, 2026. Let's jump right into our community news, starting with the recent January 5th meeting of the Sydney Board of Trustees. This article by our correspondent, Ann Roten. The Village of Sydney Board of Trustees met on Monday, January 5th in the Sydney Community Building at 7 p.m. The meeting began with a recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance and a roll call of trustees in attendance. Village of Sydney President John Finn started the meeting by asking for public comment. Brett Franzen from the Goose and Gander business spoke about the possibility of downtown Sydney businesses having a street fair, and he was told the plans for that would need to be done under the auspices of the Sydney Improvement Group. And Sydney Improvement Group President Donna Hooker asked if this was something that the businesses across the board wanted to do on their own, or if they wanted the Sydney Improvement Group to help them. He responded that they just wanted to know what they needed to do to have a street fair. For example, what are the rules? Mr. Franzen will be going to one of the Sydney Improvement Group's meetings to follow up on that conversation. Sydney Shepherd, who is the state organizer for Energy Builders, was also in attendance at the meeting to update the board concerning a possible Sydney community benefits contribution from the Baywa Solar Farm east of Sydney, and reported that Baywa was not yet ready to talk about specifics. There were no additional comments from the public, so President Finn moved on to ask trustees to approve the minutes of the Monday, December 1st meeting, and that motion was carried. A public hearing, publicized in newspaper notices and through letters sent to downtown Sydney property owners requesting special use permits, then followed. The properties originally zoned for business and not zoned for having people living in them, i.e. residential properties, was actually the subject being discussed by the property owners, the general public, and the Board of Trustees. A representative of the Sydney Fire and Rescue voiced concerns about making sure that the property owners have definite entrance and exit doors out of the, in and out of their property. They wanted everyone to be safe. They went on to report that the buildings were designed for business and not residential use when they were built, so they wanted to make sure that safety was being considered as building designs were being brought up. The Sydney president and trustees' position was that the businesses asking for special use permits initially needed to have smoke detectors, fire extinguishers, lights in the front and the back of the buildings, and entrance and egress, i.e. front and back doors, and other items needed to be included in the codes. Also noted by the board was that any granted special use permits would only be in force for the current property owner, and that special use permits would have to be revisited by the board and new property owners in the event that properties were sold. Matt Catron, who attended as a representative of the Sydney Masonic Lodge, requested that the village send out a letter with information on all of the items that the Village of Sydney wants those property owners to comply with in as part of their special use permits. A motion from Trustee Brett Harris A motion from Trustee Brett Harris to approve the findings presented with discussed changes allowing for these special use permits was carried. a motion from Trustee Brett Harris to approve the findings and decision as presented with discussed changes, allowing for a special use permit for the property owner at 214 South David Street, carried. The motion to approve the finding and decision as presented with discussed changes, allowing for the special use permit for 216 South David Street, also carried. A lengthy discussion concerning the property at 2020 South David Street included noting that issues at the property were bad enough that they involve life-saving issues and that the property was dilapidated to the point that the village could not support a special use permit for that property. A motion from Trustee Brett Harris to approve the finding and decision as presented with the incorporation of changes as discussed, denied the special use permit for 2020 South David Street. Village Sydney President John Finn began his comments by leading a discussion to approve changes to Section 6.5, overtime compensation of the Employee Policy Handbook. A motion from Trustee Brett Harris stating that anything over regular hours should be time and a half, carried. Another lengthy discussion under President Finn's comments concerned changes to Section 6.7. This involved after-duty emergency call-out. No action was taken on this item. Discussion to approve retroactive pay for maintenance staff from November 24th, 2025 to December 7th, 2025, this pay period, took place under President Finn's comments, but no action was taken. A discussion among trustees on whether or not to keep the village time clock then took place, and the board decided to continue using the village time clock as is. Sydney Maintenance Supervisor Dustin Butts reported that Kevin Dodd will be digging drainage tile on Byron Street starting on Tuesday, January 6th. Trustee Matt Laurent expressed his desire to have sidewalk snow removal done on Main Street to keep folks from having to walk on the street in the event that snow was too deep on the sidewalks. No action was taken on this item. Finance Chair Donna Hooker presented the finance report and asked Treasurer Ashley Reinhart if there were any additional bills and was told that there were none. Donna Hooker's motion then to pay all of the monthly bills for December as presented was carried. There was no public property report, as Trustee and Public Property Chair Tyler Bickers was not in attendance. Village of Sydney Trustee and Community Development Chair Leroy Schluter reported that the Saturday, December 6th Sydney Hometown Christmas event, sponsored by the Sydney Improvement Group, had gone very well and commended the Sydney Improvement Group President Donna Hooker and her team for a job well done. Trustee Schluter additionally reported that the Village of Sydney Codebook, published on the Sydney website, had not been updated since December 6, 2021, and that the village really needed to see that codebook was updated. Sydney Clerk Ashley Reinhart reported that she had taken note that updates to the Village of Sydney Codebook were behind and stated that she was working on getting the codebook updated. Under old and new business, Brett Harris brought up some questions about paid leave and the Family Medical Leave Act. No action was taken following a discussion. The meeting was closed by President John Finn at 8:59 p.m., and the next regular monthly meeting of the Village of Sydney Board of Trustees will take place on Monday, February 2nd at 7 p.m. in the Sydney Community Building at 211 East Main Street in downtown Sydney. Next, we move on to the recent TIF meeting in Tolono, this article by Diane Ducey. After catching the Village of Tolono meetings online, I caught up with an active citizen, whose name is Casey Wilson, who spoke out during the public input section of the meeting and provided her with his presentation. And, according to Mr. Wilson, I lived in Tolono from 2009 to about 2012, then moved to Philo for a bit, but then I moved back to Tolono in 2021. So the Unity area as a whole has always been home for my adult life. I was actually approached by other members of the community to talk about the TIF, because before now, I hadn't really paid that much attention to our board meetings. I looked into it a little and had a general understanding of what it was, and actually thought to myself that this sounds illegal in terms of diverting tax dollars. Then on December 16th, the village held a special TIF meeting before the board meeting. I wasn't able to attend in person, but I watched and listened via Zoom. I have volunteered my time with the schools over the years and have spent a lot of time with the park district. I'm not on the park board, but I am actively involved in their softball and baseball programs. So I get a lot of questions about the parks and why things aren't fixed or why something hasn't been replaced, etc. And the answer is simple. They don't have the money. When I listened to Bree Ocasio speak at the TIF meeting about the park's projected losses, suddenly it all made sense. They're not receiving the funding they should be because it is being diverted into the TIF fund. From there, I began getting really invested in this issue. Bree asked that the village get a fifth grade level education on TIFs, so I decided to start posting to our community page, which is called the Tolono Wire. What was started as just informative posts quickly turned into me being opposed to the idea of TIF 2. The more I looked into the information, the more I disliked what I saw. Diverting tax dollars away from the school, parks, fire department, and library in exchange for what seems like a lot of empty promises. Those in favor of the TIFs say it's an opportunity for growth and development and fixing the parts of town that are older and in need of repair. What I saw in the village's own reports were a lot of lines with $0. Now I'm hoping that I can get the village board members to take a hard look at locking our village into another 23-year agreement when so little was done with the first one. Next, we move on to our weekly news from the Philo Library. As you recall, in last week's column, they promised some new books on the way and asked for suggestions for others that the community would like to see. So, for our information, the books on order in no particular order include the following. And many more, of course. They are The Last Days of Marilyn Monroe by James Patterson, A Proving Ground by Michael Connelly. This is a Lincoln lawyer novel. Ghost Town by Tom Perotta, Librarians by Sherry Thomas, The Loneliness of Sonia and Sonny by Kieran Desai, The Shop on Hidden Lane by Jane Ann Krenst, and The Storm by Rachel Hawkins. Some of these books are in large print, and we'll be learning more about them once they arrive and are ready for the shelves. That's the news from now from the Philo Library. And now we have a chance to look up at the night sky with David Leakey, who is retired director of the Starkle Planetarium at Parkland College. And this column refers to the dates January 14th to January 20th. And he begins, "Look westward this week, just after sunset, and you'll find the stars of our summer triangle, Vega, Deneb, and Altair, with Deneb being the highest of the three. these three stars were high in the sky during June, July, and August. So you might be asking, why are we seeing these summer stars in January? Well, with the tilt of the Earth's axis, we see the sun making a short trip across the southern sky, hence our short days. Since it's getting dark early, it gives us a chance to see more of the darkened sky. At about 6:30 p.m., the star Deneb is about 26 degrees high in the northwest. Deneb is part of Cygnus, our celestial swan, but it also is known as the Northern Cross. The tip of the cross is near the horizon in our sky, and the cross, well, it looks like a cross on the horizon. It's amazing timing, given we just had Christmas, don't you think? And he closes by promising that we'll see a waxing crescent moon in the sky early next week. We want to take a moment to congratulate several local higher education students on awards they have earned, starting with Abby Horn, who has been named to the president's list of Southern New Hampshire University. Abby is from Broadlands. Next up, we want to congratulate Annabelle Stegg, who has also been named to the Southern New Hampshire University's Dean's List. Annabelle is from Tolono. And next, Alexis Ritchie. Congratulations. She has been named to the Lindsay Wilson University Dean's List. Alexis is also from Tolono. Congratulations to each of these three high achievers. Next up, we have the Rocket Rundown, courtesy of our student writer, Olivia Withreft. Girls basketball played Arcola last Monday, and they won 49-29. On Thursday, they played the Illinois Valley Conference Ghosts and lost 23-52. To end their week, girls basketball played Tuscola and lost again 38-56. This week, girls basketball will play against Pontiac on Monday and St. Thomas More on Friday. Boys basketball played Tri-Valley last Tuesday. The Rockets won the game 69-55. On Saturday, played in St. Joe for a shootout. The team played Warrensburg-Latham and won a tight game 68-60. This upcoming week, boys basketball will play Tuscola on Tuesday, St. Thomas More on Thursday, and Central Catholic High School on Saturday. The Rockets' current record is now 16-2. Boys wrestling competed in the Oakwood Duels last Tuesday. They went 1-1 and scored 10-58 against Gibson City and 47-30 against Mount Zion. On Saturday, the boys competed in the Sycamore Invitational. Top 10 finishers included Abe Davidson, who came in second, Ben Mullins, who came in fourth, A.J. Daly at sixth, Josh Heath at ninth, and Hayden Smith came in 10th. The girls had a two-day tournament in Carbondale over the weekend. Phoenix Molina earned her 100th win over the weekend, as well as placing first in her weight bracket. Ava Beldo placed third. Next Thursday, the boys will compete in Effingham, and then Friday and Saturday, they will compete in an Illinois Prairie Conference tournament. The girls will compete in Canton next Saturday. Dance team competed at Charleston on Saturday. They placed first in the hip-hop competition and fourth overall at IHSA. They'll compete again next Saturday in Clinton. Congratulations again to the Unity Rockettes. Next up, some commendations on the very, very busy and generous seasons brought to us by our local charities, starting with The Giving Place, which last Wednesday served 11 families, including 44 adults and 25 children. The food distributed totaled about $800. All food is donated or purchased through cash donations from our very generous community. Next up, Catholic Charities provided their report for their activities in December. St. Pat's Pantry, located in the St. Patrick Parish Center at 304 East Vine in Tolono, was open 10 times during September, serving 43 families, including 28 of them multiple times, for a total of 116 visits to the pantry. These included 4 new families and 2 special deliveries. 25 Christmas dinner boxes were distributed, and the pantry was able to provide Christmas gifts to 10 families. It should be noted that while SNAP benefits have resumed, many families were cut in the amount that they were able to receive. St. Patrick's Altar and Rosary Society provided toiletries and cleaning supplies. St. Thomas School provided handmade Christmas cards for the Christmas dinner boxes. St. Thomas parishioners provided non-perishable foods weekly. Other donors included the Dollar General stores in Philo, Tolono, and Villa Grove, who donated a combined 417 pounds of food. The Aldi of Savoy donated 185 pounds of food, and the Eastern Illinois Food Bank provided 3,400 pounds of food. They want to offer their thanks for donations to St. Patrick's, St. Thomas, and St. Mary's for the covering the costs of the Christmas dinner boxes and keeping the pantry shelves stocked. Today's paper includes a lengthy discussion brought to us by the Capital News Service about Illinois' efforts against menacing immigration raids. Illinois and Chicago sued the Trump administration last Monday, seeking to severely limit immigration agents' authority in the state after accusing the feds of unleashing an organized bombardment to coerce state and local officials to change their immigration policies. State and city leaders want to end the feds' roving patrol policy of interrogating people they encounter on the street about their citizenship and immigration status without any probable cause. They're also seeking to limit crowd control tactics, such as using tear gas to disperse nonviolent crowds, and using tear gas. And to prevent the feds from scanning the biometric information of state residents. Border Patrol agents and ICE officers have acted as occupiers rather than officers of the law, said Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. They randomly and often violently question residents. Without warrants or probable cause, they brutally detain citizens and non-citizens alike. They use tear gas and other chemical weapons against bystanders, injuring dozens, including children, the elderly, and local police officers. Raoul, along with the City of Chicago, filed the 103-page lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois. It accuses the federal government of applying pressure over policy differences through means such as withholding federal funds, attempting to deploy the National Guard, and, most disruptively, executing an immigration enforcement operation described by state officials as causing turmoil and imposing a climate of fear. The lawsuit also seeks to prevent immigration enforcement at sensitive locations without appropriate reasoning, including courthouses, schools, social service organizations, and medical facilities. The lawsuit seeks to bar immigration agents from trespassing on private property to make arrests in violation of the Fourth Amendment. The suit argues that immigration agents only have the authority to do so within 25 miles of a U.S. border to prevent illegal entry to our country. The state is asking the court to find that the federal government's menacing, violent, and unlawful incursion violates the 10th Amendment and to order federal agents to stop using tactics that exceed their statutory authority. Governor J.B. Pritzker released a statement in support of the lawsuit, writing that, "In the face of the Trump administration's cruelty and intimidation, Illinois is standing up against the attacks on our people. Today, Illinois is once again taking Donald Trump to court to hold his administration accountable for their unlawful tactics, unnecessary escalations, and flagrant abuses of power," Pritzker said. The lawsuit names, among others, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director Todd Lyons, and Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino, the public face of DHS's Operation Midway Blitz Immigration Enforcement Campaign, as defendants. Much of the lawsuit pulls from claims brought in an earlier suit by media organizations and protesters who challenged the Fed's use of force tactics. The plaintiffs motioned for the case to be reassigned to the same judge in that challenge, U.S. District Judge Sarah Ellis, according to reporting by the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times. Previously, she had issued an injunction against use of force in that case, but the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals later stayed it. The Seventh Circuit stays judge's order restricting immigration agents' use of riot control weapons, and the judge was hesitant to grant dismissal of the lawsuit over immigration agents' use of force tactics in Chicago. The DHS spokeswoman, Tricia McLaughlin, told Capital News Illinois in a statement that the lawsuit was baseless. She went on to say, "The fact is that sanctuary politicians in Illinois and Chicago released violent criminals, including murderers, rapists, drug dealers, pedophiles, gang members, and terrorists, onto our streets, and their dereliction of duty cost lives. Just ask Katie Abraham's father," McLaughlin said, referring to a 20-year-old Glenview woman who was killed in a hit-and-run crash last year, allegedly by a Guatemalan in the country without legal authorization. "This is a baseless lawsuit, and we will look forward to proving that in court." The state of Minnesota, along with the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, filed a similar lawsuit Monday, seeking to block a surge of immigration enforcement in that state. It comes less than a week after an ICE agent shot and killed a 37-year-old American citizen, Renee Nicole Good, at close range while she was apparently attempting to flee a traffic stop. The Illinois lawsuit claims that the so-called Midway Blitz is part of a campaign of coercion by the Trump administration, attempting to force state and local governments, including Illinois and the city of Chicago, to change their sanctuary immigration policies. The state's Trust Act, signed by then-Governor Bruce Rauner in 2017, generally prohibits state and local law enforcement from assisting the federal government with immigration enforcement unless a federal criminal warrant is presented. Chicago has had sanctuary city status since 1985. The state and federal policies are meant to foster trust between immigrant communities and law enforcement by ensuring that interactions do not result in immigration detention or deportation. But these policies, which predominate in the nation's blue states and blue cities, have been the target of ire from the Trump administration since they began. This includes our reading of the Wednesday, January 14th edition of Southern Champaign County Today. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and I invite you to join us again next week.